All right, good morning. It's kind of an early morning start talking about energy prices and econometrics, but that's what we got. I want to acknowledge my co-author, one of my PhD students. If you can pronounce her name, you go for it. Seema is her first name. That's what I call her, Seema. What we want to do is we want to look at a couple of issues. Agriculture is highly tied to energy. We've seen a lot of volatility in energy prices, from very high to very low energy prices. We've also seen changes in commodity prices. So whereas corn prices have dropped pretty substantially, cotton prices started out low and actually have been one of the bright spots in terms of prices over the last 12 months. And if you look at the agricultural sector as a whole, it generally benefits from low energy prices. I mean, the lower the prices are, those input costs or those input prices are lower and contribute to greater production. Cotton has an interesting thing in that when you're looking at low energy prices, it actually creates competition on the demand side. So cotton's a little bit unique from the standpoint that it's looking at two differential effects of energy prices. And then we talk about corn and ethanol and sort of the bioenergy markets. So all of those things sort of play into this what's happening from an energy price standpoint, what's happening to commodity prices. And so we raise that question, and one of the things that, is the volatility. As volatility rises or falls, how does that complicate pricing for producers or organizations out there? So that's really what sort of motivated us. We wanted to look at what happens when we shock the market. So if we see a supply side shock or a demand side shock, and it's interesting in this literature, what we tend to do is we talk about supply and demand side shocks, and then we talk about price shocks because those supply and demand side shocks have differential effects on prices. So we'll look at those in a minute. We'll also look at things like exchange rates because exchange rates are pretty important, especially to cotton, since we now export the bulk of our cotton. We're very sensitive to exchange rates. We've looked at things like oil prices and corn prices, oil prices and soybean prices. And those things are, fairly well documented, some of the stuff that I've done previously and others. But we wanted to look at this specific to cotton because of that unique relationship. So just to give you a little bit of perspective, this graph illustrates the blue line is the crude oil price, and the whatever color that is, kind of army green or whatever, is the corn price. And you can see early on, they're moving about the same, but the relationship's less tight. As we get past the 2005 period, when the renewable fuel standard really kicks in, that's when you see that pattern tighten up and they start to move much more closely together. Now, anybody that's worked with corn or ethanol, there's a threshold. If the oil price is above about $80 a barrel, that makes ethanol competitive and those things get much closer together. If the oil price is below $80 a barrel, then we get into this situation where corn prices are going to drop, and we hit that, whatever that blend mandate is, that's where we end up stopping. So, but you can see that relationship has evolved over time, and largely that's a policy-induced innovation. If we look at cotton price and crude oil price, you get a little, those relationships are together, but they're not nearly as cohesive as they are with corn. And, of course, remember, what we're talking about, the oil price on cotton is a derived demand, so it's an input into the cotton production process. But it's also, on the other side, it affects the demand for cotton through polyester and some of these other synthetics. So you get these two pulling apart relationship. You get this pulling apart, so it tends to get this separation. But that doesn't mean that the oil price doesn't have an impact on cotton. So that's what we wanted to look at. Of course, if you look at cotton and corn, those, you know, we see the commodity price spike there, but corn has stayed up relatively longer than cotton did, but now cotton is recovering a little bit on the tail end. If you look at all commodity prices look a lot the same. So they're going through the same transformation process or the same underlying cyclical or counter-cyclical process with the overall economy. And so, you know, while we get deviations like this here on this graph, they're generally following an economic growth cycle kind of relationship. Now if we look at, again, ethanol and crude oil price, you can see those two follow each other fairly closely. And this graph is only after 2005, so that's, you know, when we talk about ethanol, of course we've had ethanol since the 70s, but nobody cared until 2005, and then all of a sudden it becomes important because we put a mandate on it. So crude oil price and ethanol price are oftentimes going to reflect each other. That's sort of the point here, is that if when we're looking at energy markets, those two are fairly closely related. Now, if you look at this is total petroleum production and international total petroleum and other liquid production. So if you look at the U.S. crude, you know, we were flat, but then we hit this, you know, the fracking era, and then all of a sudden U.S. production has grown. And most people, I find it fascinating, we still talk about the U.S. being, you know, this huge net importer of oil, but the U.S. is the largest producer of oil in the world and is a net exporter. And so it's pretty interesting when it's what we're importing and what we're exporting that becomes the issue, not the total volume. So the energy market, the energy evolution has taken place. But if you notice here, you know, the U.S. crude oil production, we're talking about a pretty rapid increase in production, but that's kept prices relatively low. You know, we've managed to stay now in the, you know, in the $40 and $50 per barrel range for quite some time. And I'll talk a little bit about some forecasts in a moment. Just the data, you know, we're looking at global total petroleum, and we're using that to talk about supply side shocks and then demand side shocks there, the IP, the Industrial Production Index, which is the demand side shock. So if we see a rapid rise in industrial production in China, we know that that's going to be associated with a rapid rise in energy consumption. Those two go together fairly well. So those are our two. We're looking at a trade-weighted U.S. dollar index with major currencies, and then corn price, crude oil price, cotton price, and ethanol price. And so what we do, I'm just going to slap that up there for a second, but I'm not going to talk about it in great detail. It's just a structural vector autoregression model. Where we're looking at all of those as endogenous explanatory variables on cotton price. So we're trying to figure out, in this case, what happens when we perturb the system. So, you know, the bottom thing, that's the impulse response functions, the visualization I'll give you is if you throw a rock out into a lake and you see ripples, the impulse response function, what it's doing is it's measuring the size of those ripples and how long it takes those ripples to get to the shoreline. Okay, that's really what we're doing here, is how long does it take a process to work its way through the system. There's some wording here, but it basically is contained in this graph. The top two panels here represent those demand shocks and supply shocks. The left side is a supply shock. In other words, if we see a change in global production of oil, what happens to cotton price? And the right-hand side is a demand shock. Okay, so obviously, the supply shock is a little more pronounced in the sense that if there's a supply-side shock, we tend to see a pretty rapid rise in oil price, I mean in cotton price, but then it dissipates out. And the bottom is months from the time that the disturbance occurs. So normally, what we're talking about here is returning after a supply-side shock. You're going to see a positive increase in price for about 4 months, and then it's going to work its way back. Cotton price will work its way back to a long-run equilibrium. on the demand side, it's a little more volatile because the demand side on oil is tied into this thing we called industrial production, right? So if industrial production goes up, it has a number of effects. It's affecting both the pull-through of cotton. In other words, GDP is going up, so we see people buying more cotton. Barry Worsham talked about that at the Outlook session. But you're also seeing competition for those resources to produce that cotton at the same time. So, you know, energy, oil, labor, all those other things. So industrial production has some differential effects. The oil price, though, is pretty clear. Okay, when we see a spike in the oil price, we see a spike in the cotton price. And it persists for 6 to 7 months before we ever see it return back to what we would call a stable equilibrium. So oil prices do matter to cotton. I mean, you know, when we start thinking about cross-hedging relationships and all this other stuff, it's important what's happening in the oil market because that oil market effect is going to have a pretty substantial impact. Exchange rates the same way, it's just the opposite, but basically if we see a strengthening of the U.S. dollar, you're going to see a decline in the U.S. price, and that's going to persist for about 5 months. So every time the U.S. dollar goes up, you can expect a weakness in the U.S. cotton price, and that weakness is going to persist for 5 or 6 months. And one of the problems that we're having right now is a rapid strengthening of the U.S. dollar. It's, you know, the cotton market has been fairly resilient in the face of a strengthening U.S. dollar, but what that probably means is that there's a lot more demand-side pressure on in global markets to pull that cotton through, and it's keeping those prices up relative to what it would be if we didn't see some increase in demand to push that cotton or to pull that cotton out of the U.S. So, you know, in all these things, you remember, you know, it's economics. So it's ceteris paribus, everything else equal. So this is what the exchange rate does, everything else equal. Okay, so we looked at, we changed the price there to ethanol. So, and you get slightly different response, but the same general conclusions, and that is if you're thinking about what's happening here, you're talking about the ethanol price up here, or the ethanol shocks and the ethanol price down here in the bottom left hand corner. Remember the graph, ethanol is pretty close to oil, but you know what we don't capture in these kinds of models is all of the pretty complicated interrelationships. So when we talk about ethanol being a representative of energy, it's a representation of energy, but it's not energy because corn is also competing with cotton for land area and other things. So when ethanol price goes up, you're going to expect to see more corn acres because that's going to pull more corn acres, corn price up, which is then going to pull cotton acres down. So that's what's happening here as opposed to the oil market, where you're talking about an input cost, you know, an energy price input cost kind of thing. So if energy prices go up, we plant less cotton because we have fewer dollars to make that happen. So while the graph looks very similar, the underlying economic mechanics are a little bit different because now we're talking about a competition with corn versus oil prices. But you still see the same basic relationship with trade, exchange rates, that sort of stuff. So when we look at, you know, a number of these other things we've looked at, scenarios, I didn't, you know, when she originally put this PowerPoint together, I think it was like 60 slides long. I was like, I got 20 minutes, don't do that to me. So I told her to pick. But there's a number of these different things that we're going to look at. But there's a couple of key issues that, you know, when we step back away from the econometric results and think about what's happening in the world today. One, we just saw the Fed raise interest rates. They're going to continue to raise interest rates, which is just going to cause the dollar to strengthen. So as the dollar strengthens, what's that going to do? It's going to have these shock effects on the cotton market. So we can expect to continue to see sort of buffeting weakness against that. And if you look at where we're at in terms of prices, you know, we keep bumping up to 70, 71, 72 cents, but then we keep coming back down. And that's that headwind that we keep, you know, that we can't get past it because the dollar is making this too expensive to ship. And that's not, that nothing on that is going to, I mean, that's going to continue to be a problem. The other sort of thing is, if you look at, if you believe IHS Global Insight, which I'm not sure I do, but if you believe their projections, they're forecasting at the end of this 10-year cycle, oil prices to be about $122 a barrel. I don't think we'll get there. But if we see that kind of, any kind of rise in oil prices over the next 2 to 3 years, you can see what happens. So that's going to create both a supply side problem for cotton in terms of energy costs, but it's also going to create a demand side issue where polyester and other synthetics are going to be rising in price relative to cotton. So as we play this out, those are the two big ones. So you know, the exchange rate and the energy prices are probably going to be the biggest factors that drive us forward. But what we do see here, the important result here, is that those effects, if we have a supply side shock, we have a demand side shock, or trade weighted shock, they can persist in the cotton market for 6 or 7 months. So not only does it mean that that event creates something, but that volatility is going to continue for some time. So again, if you throw that rock into the lake, those ripples are going to continue for some time. And if you think about the logic of the cotton market, it makes sense for a 5 to 6 month window, because that's about the time in a production cycle. So you're switching from one growth to another growth, and that gives you the time to make the adjustments and all those sorts of things. So those are important changes, but I think in terms of trading or understanding what that volatility is likely to do, it's just best to expect, if there's an event that's going to occur, you just plan on 5 to 6 months worth of increased volatility. That's sort of the bottom line. So, a couple of things that we want to do from this. You know, if we look at some of the issues in paper in a minute, we talk about the export elasticity demand. One of the issues that this paper doesn't address very well, and we'd like to address a little bit better, is what happens as the Chinese stockpile comes down. Because as that, you know, we've had that stockpile now for some years, and so it's definitely affected the range of prices that we can trade in based on that. As that stockpile comes down, obviously, Leslie talked about the other day, we're going to replace some of those with other stocks around the world, but we're going to come down to a lower stock level, which means the potential for more volatility. So how are these going to be exacerbated? Are we going to see even longer term or bigger effects of oil price shocks when we have or exchange rate shocks when we have fewer stocks sitting out there? So that's one of the things we want to look at, is maybe trying to vary these parameters based on the size historically of the Chinese stocks. I think that would probably give us a little bit better insight. So with that, I'm going to stop.